Thank you, Roy. And thank you to all of you who make this service possible, and for Todd, who couldn't be here in person, for inviting me to speak. I have been, since I last saw you, I have a cane. I also have orthotics for drop feet bilateral from chemo. And in May, it's been a tough year. So it qualifies me, I think, to speak on this topic about grief being a portal for transformation. In May, I went by ambulance from the urgent care to Sacred Heart for symptoms of a TIA, a transient mini stroke. While they did the MRI, my neurologist here in Coeur d'Alene saw a shadow. And in that shadow led to having brain surgery in September. And they repaired a fistula that affects balance and also vision. So part of my grief is that I can no longer drive on the freeway. I can only drive short distances, and I'm dependent on generous people like Roy driving me here and my husband and others to go places. I've been independently traveling since I was 12 years old and has traveled the world. So to be able to travel with trekking poles, and now when I go to Mexico, I have, with my husband's help, I have those suction cup grab bars for bathrooms. So this comes on top of already experiencing stage 3 colon cancer, a permanent colostomy, breast cancer, and surgery for skin cancer. So part of me, not just a small part, but a large part, was saying, really, God? Is this not enough? Or what message was I supposed to get that I never got that this keeps repeating? And at times I was worried. I was worried that perhaps I had done something wrong, that I wasn't being spiritual enough, that somehow I was attracting or causing this to be happening. And I've read most recently a book by Gina Lake called Embracing the Flower That Fades, Embracing Change. Have you read it? Embracing Change and Also Aging. And she invited me to reframe how I was looking at my illnesses as really being part of my soul's purpose and journey. That in fact, I've signed up for this. That I, from this, is going to come a pathway to be of service. And that's what I've been discovering. That one of the, when I was really grieving having colon cancer, I wrote this book because I often teach and preach about what I most need to learn. It's called From Grief to Resiliency, 10 Tools. And I'll mention some of them today. And I also have a sign-up sheet here for anyone who would like me to email you this booklet. I'm happy to do that. Just send me your email address. But part of it is really recognizing that God is present in my challenges. Now, at times, I've forgotten that. And so I appreciate emotions as being sources of information. And I want to go through my... Brian has generously put my PowerPoint on the screen here, so I'm going to... do that. Whoops. Okay. Thank you. So I mentioned the booklet as being a pathway of service. I also want to set my timer. And emotions are important sources of information. That Jesus wept. Jesus got angry. He threw the money changers out of the temple. He sweat drops of blood, anticipating that he was probably going to be tortured and crucified because he was faithful to what he felt God was calling him to say. The prophets also spoke with emotion, and in fact, one of the prophets is Jeremiah, and he is known as writing the whole book in the Hebrew Bible known as Lamentations, which means wailing and being of pain and sorrow and grieving, especially as the Jerusalem was destroyed and they were brought into captivity by the Babylonians. When I look at Jesus beginning his ministry, he quotes the prophet Isaiah, chapter 61, verses 1 through 3, and he says, God's Spirit has anointed me to preach what? Good news. And to whom? To those who are in slavery. Those who are mourning, those who are weeping, And I want to remind you, Jesus was a refugee who had to leave his country because of political events, because he was a threat to those in power. Herod wanted to have him killed because he thought he would be a threat to him. So Jesus, Mary, and Joseph, I don't know for those of you who've had young children, but traveling with a young child to a foreign country, they went to Egypt. My husband and I had a chance to go to Cairo, Egypt in 2023. We went to the church called Abu Serba, which is known as the hospitality place where they welcomed Jesus and his family to stay and to avoid persecution. And so I look at how can we too be support for those who are vulnerable. The prophets consistently speak out on behalf of advocating for the poor, the vulnerable, the orphan, the widow, those who are most in need, the refugees, the immigrants, and that we would hopefully stand up for them as well. So tears can signify sadness and also tears in our relationships. One of the people I read meditations I read every morning is by Father Richard Rohr. He's a Franciscan priest, and he just wrote the book, it just came out March 2nd, called The Tears of Things. And I was talking about the role of the prophets, but also the power of tears in our own transformation, and to be respectful of the tears of others versus shedding them out. St. Francis of Assisi taught, weeping reminds us to surrender our need to be in control to try and fix things, and instead we accept our deep vulnerability. My maid of honor has been a long-term friend for over almost 50 years. She knows me well, and she said she was going to put on my tombstone, "She finally let go." I'm hoping I can learn that lesson before then. My point is that when I had a temporary colostomy, a very experienced ostomy nurse said she had never met anyone in her 40 years of working with ostomates who tried harder to avoid having a permanent colostomy. So my grief really started in 2009 when what was temporary became permanent. And it became a dark, dark night of the soul. And to tell you the truth, well-intentioned people sometimes were not that helpful. That I felt at times that because I, even though I went to prayer and healing services, I didn't get the outcome I wanted. And I thought perhaps I didn't pray well enough or hard enough or appropriately, or I attracted or something like that. And that was painful for me. So that those words from Gina Lake, that really my soul has signed up for certain lessons in life, and this is part of my lesson and also path of service. So Francis Weller, no relation, but he wrote a book that I've been studying in the last 10 months. It's called The Wild Edge of Sorrow. And in there, he describes five gates of grief, and I'm walking through each of them. The first one is that everything we love, we will lose. My independence has been really hard to lose. I'm reminded of our Buddhist statue here with the light shining, is the Buddhist philosophy about impermanence. And when I hang on to things, I become vulnerable because I'm attached to it. And when that attachment doesn't happen the way I expected, then I grieve even more. The next grief is the places that have not known love. In my family of origin, both my mother and my brother died at 47 and 49. My mother died of spiritual abuse, fasting to death, thinking that was God's will. She was not present to me a lot of my life and abandoned me when I was 18 and left home and questioned her spirituality. My brother is known as the international founder of personal coaching, Thomas Leonard. And when I questioned him about some of his behaviors, he said, "I don't consider you my sister." That was his last words before he died 13 years later. So there has been grief within my family of places that have not known love. Sorrows in the world. I have mentioned already many of the sorrows. My husband, who's here, is a remodeler as well as a retired nurse. and he transformed our downstairs to be an aging in place for us as we got older. I'm grateful that he's prepared us for that. He's also transformed the bathroom recently, literally since January, to be an ADA bathroom with all the bells and whistles that I will need, so I'm grateful for that. But before we needed to use this aging in place location, we hosted a Ukrainian refugee family that was pregnant with their first child for over a year. So they have since moved out, they've had jobs, they're supporting themselves. And so when I read about policies and possible deportations of 240,000 Ukrainian refugees in the United States, I think of that makes it very personal because we know them and we know what they suffered. They showed us pictures of their bombed homes in the Ukraine, and they were a middle-class, wealthy family, and they left it all to be refugees here. What are they going back to? Sorrow, devastation. I feel grief for the sorrows of the world and the recent changes in policies that make it difficult. What we expected and did not receive. I taught parenting classes, because again, teaching what I need to learn, for the community colleges and Head Start families for 24 years. When there was a budget cut, I was let go without any retirement benefits and without any retirement party. It was a sadness of feeling like a pattern in my life of not feeling seen, valued, or recognized was continuing. An ancestral grief. I believe the work of Rachel Yehuda. She's a psychiatrist, a Jewish psychiatrist in New York. She has been working with the grandchildren of Holocaust survivors. She's been testing their telomeres, which is a measure of stress. What she noticed is that the grandchildren who never heard from their parents or their grandparents the horrors that their grandparents experienced surviving the Holocaust, that these grandchildren had the same shortened telomeres as their grandparents. That ancestral grief, not released, not expressed, not let go, festers. And I believe it affects future generations. With my mother's family and my father's family, there are a total of 15 grandchildren. Six of those grandchildren died before they were 30 and 40 years old. That's 40% of my cousins. I believe there's ancestral grief in our families. And my goal, my intention, my purpose has been to name that grief, to express it out loud for my own healing, and we hope to have future grandchildren for their healing and for future generations as well. So discovering the gifts of grief as being a portal for transformation. So Irish poet John O'Donohue talks about grief as truly being life is a growth in the art of loss, and that we learn to hold sorrow close as a way of learning from it, of expressing and experiencing our own vulnerability, and being able to reach out to others with compassion and humility, and also for prayer and support. When the world falls apart as we once knew it, we've got two basic choices. We can either respond with anger, depression, isolation. Sometimes we do more and more, trying to distract ourselves. Or we could respond in trust, with practicing deeper acceptance of what is and looking for the gift in that. I wore this necklace today as a reminder of the two hands. One is to be able to let go, and the other is to express my grief, and the other is to accept the blessings, the compassion, the support from others. A year ago, Unity Center, the spiritual center in Kansas City, as you know, does the Daily Word and other booklets. And they did one for the Lenten reflections on let go. Well, I'm a slow learner, so I repeated the one from last year into this year. And again, I can send you copies. But I thought for today, the whole theme for the month of Lent, 6 weeks, is about letting go. And the theme for today is, I let go of worry. I choose to expand faith. And when things are not going well, that is a real faith trust invitation to expand our faith in ways we would not have expected. And so it's trusting that even though this is not my preference or what I would like, I'm willing, I'm open to the possibility there can be gifts in this. So tears can soften our heart. I didn't cry much when I was growing up because my tears were frozen. I cry now more often. I have the gift, because I'm at risk to fall, and I have fallen and hit my head on the ice. That's why we've been traveling to Zihuatanejo, Mexico for the last 18 years during the winter, so that I can get some exercise and not be afraid about falling. One of the families we've gotten to know is a weaver and also a glassmaker. I knew her when she was excited about being pregnant, and then I saw her about 2 months ago, and their baby now is about 2 years old. They've noticed in the last 9 months since I last saw them that their baby has muscular dystrophy. And she was sitting on the floor of their loom and weaving shop, hardly moving, very vacant. And I just cried. I cried for the hopes they had for their child. It's their only child. And the tears just came. I wasn't expecting them. But I believe they were touched by my tears of compassion for what they were going through. We bought one of their weavings. It's a tablecloth. It's in our aging in place apartment. And when I look at it, it reminds me to pray for them and all those who are suffering, who had disappointed expectations and hopes, for their comfort, for their healing. I mentioned about befriending our loss and grief as a wise teacher and to avoid what Joan Boroshenko describes as New Age fundamentalism and spiritual my practice, by blaming or judging people that their beliefs somehow caused their illness. To be able to let that go and to say, I really don't know why this is happening, but I trust it is part of my plan, part of my purpose. So this, I mentioned about, this is the third Sunday in Lent, and there's a story of the caterpillar that is written by Elizabeth Satoris, who is an evolutionary biologist. And I got permission from her to write her story in my booklet about transformation, especially since the caterpillar and the butterfly are often symbols for Easter. In the cocoon stage, there are imaginal cells that are encoded. And what's interesting is that crisis allows these imaginal cells to be released. And then digestive enzymes break the caterpillar body into a goo. How many of us have experienced breaking down of what we held on so tightly, what we most wanted? But in that breaking down, in though it seems like a total dismantling of what we held important in our life, in fact, chaos is preceding this new creation, but it requires us to let go of the old. The process of struggling to get out of the cocoon strengthens the butterfly's wings. And there's a story of a young girl who saw this butterfly struggling to get out and tried to help the butterfly get out with their wings, but in fact, it damaged their wings. That in this struggle, it strengthened them. So this is important, is that we would allow the struggle to teach us the skills that we need. Perhaps it's more compassion, perhaps it's more patience, perhaps it's more perseverance, but there are gifts in the struggle not to be missed. So Brother David Steindl-Rast has written, has author of this gratefulness.org website. And in it, he talks a story about the Comstock mine in Sierra Nevada. And the miners were looking for gold, and they were so frustrated because this dang blue stuff kept clogging their machines. Little did they know that that blue stuff was sand laid with silver. My point is, sometimes I'm looking for a particular gift, a particular blessing, and I miss the surprises of the silver because I was looking and expecting for something else. So it's a willingness to be surprised at how God might answer my prayers in ways I would not have expected. So to learn to excavate our grief, to look at what might be clogging our contentment, has unexpected treasures. HeartMath always reminds us to be able to transform our thoughts, to transform our feelings. So if you know someone who is grieving, I would recommend these 8 words from Kelly Corrigan. This is from her book, Tell Me More. She did a PBS broadcast on it. And when I've been grieving, sometimes people cut me off. They say, oh, that's too bad, oh, you'll get over it, or they just do some platitude, or they jump into, well, you think you got it bad, let me tell you about mine. You've experienced that? I think so. So instead, she recommends that when someone is grieving, practice these 8 words. When they're sharing their story, tell me more. When they feel like they've paused, say, go on. Ask them again, is there more? My point is that when they are grieving, they sometimes need a safe place for them to share their experiences, to be able to excavate all that they're thinking and feeling and experiencing, and that that is a gift we can give them by listening to them. And in that fullness and compassionate listening, I think we are a healing presence for them. If for any reason you don't have someone in your life who can do that level of compassionate listening, I encourage you to do your own journaling and ask those 3 questions. Because, like that mine in Sierra Nevada, in spiraling and in asking and expanding those questions, I might then get to the nugget, whether it's silver or gold or a precious jewel. As we know, the pearl of great price comes from irritations. So in preparation for our meditation, you have, when you came in, I appreciate the people who are passing out, you have a blue marble. I want you to think of it as being like a teardrops that have been crystallized into this stone. So as we're listening to our meditation about Into the Stillness, I encourage you to think of it also as a worry stone. Many cultures use worry stones to be able to release their fears and their worries. So into the stillness, we ask for God's grace.
Please join me in singing.
In the stillness of this moment, there is peace, there is peace. In the stillness of this moment, there is peace, and I rest and trust and breathe. And know that in the stillness of this moment there is peace.
Let's sing it one more time.
In the stillness of this moment there is peace. In the stillness of this moment, there is peace, and I rest and trust and breathe and know that in the stillness of this moment, there is peace.
Thank you, Julie. As we move into the meditation, I'll just leave it here. I would like you to take your marble in your hand and rub it. And as Peter reminded me when he got his marble, we don't want to lose our marbles, but in fact, perhaps there's a gift or marbleliciousness about our dried tears, our crystallized tears. So take a moment and think of your, close your eyes if that's comfortable. Your tears are like this stone. Think of it as being like a solidified or frozen teardrop. In the stillness song reminded us, you want to breathe in peace while rubbing this glass stone to release our worries, our fears, our trepidations. We rest and trust, feeling Spirit's presence being with us here now and surrounding us with love and compassion, just as we are. Take a moment and reflect. What messages might Spirit be wanting to tell you through your tears? What might feel frozen with you, within you, that is seeking God's presence and grace to thaw? In what ways are you resisting letting go and accepting what is? What might be an unexpected tears, an unexpected gift from your tears in this situation? Whether it be an illness, a loss of income, a change or loss in relationship, the death of a loved one. What would support you to access your inner strengths today? Our affirmation today was about strength and being able to call on that strength when we most need it and to experience it surrounding us with extra grace. What might be a tangible step you're willing to take to allow your grief to become a pathway for your specific service in the world? I encourage you to put this stone in your pocket or purse or to place it on your home altar to remind you of your commitment to trust Spirit's presence is with you even when you are grieving. You are never alone. And we celebrate God is always with us. And we continue this belief being expanded as we grow and deepen it through the song, God Is.
Oh, God. Thank you.